The 7th of May 2015, the squatters I had taken a week off where I rented a small converted boathouse by the sea in order to work on this book. I had woken up several times during the night, meditated and gone back to sleep. At 7 in the morning, I meditated again for half an hour, intending to go back to sleep with a resolve to become lucid, and it worked. I came back to my place mentioned in the previous report, exactly 3 months later to the day, and at first I did not recognize it. It had been completely taken over by a lively group of young artists. When I came into the main atrium, I was greeted by a young guy who seemed to recognize me, and he immediately started showing me around and introducing me to his fellow artists. When I got involved in studying an exhibition section of the work of a woman with a French name, a vibrant series of colored pen and ink drawings, he called out for her in order to introduce me, but she didn't show up. We proceeded to look at other work and talk to other artists. The work was very diverse and enjoyable. When I looked through a window to the outside, I even found that the brickwork of the outside walls had been fashioned into fascinating figurative 3D relief work. I turned to my guide and said with a smirk and an element of pride, "Of course, you know I own this building." He looked at me, beaming back. "Of course I know. I knew the moment you walked in, but you are never here." I replied that there could hardly be a better use for this property and that I felt delighted that it was being put to such vibrant use. He then turned to me, telling me that they were expecting some people from the town, including two women who were art critics, and asked whether I would do the honors of showing them around. I was surprised by the suggestion and eagerly accepted. Although I knew exactly the layout of my house, I had yet to meet all the artists who were occupying the rooms and had carved out little studio spaces. After a short while, a small troop of people arrived, two young women who I identified as the art critics and three other guys who I wasn't sure what their particular interests were, but they were keenly interested in the Open House Art Academy that had sprung up over the last 3 months after I had turned my back on it. The guy with a golden chain around his neck jokingly asked me whether I had taken out a public indemnity insurance, because you never know what might happen. He pointed with his chin to a young sculptor who was precariously balancing on the top of his work to finish off some detail. "I dread to think what that will cost me," I responded, and we both laughed as he joked, "I can give you a quote because I used to be an insurance policy salesman." We then both walked to the top of the building, where a couple of chaps had turned the room into a small film theater and were showing off some of their work, which was quaintly shot on old-fashioned 16mm film format, displaying scratches and slight discoloration. On closer viewing, I discovered that the film contained footage shot in the early 1950s. The operator told me that the idea behind it was to reproduce a clip with a strong nostalgic feel, but telling a modern story. I spent another half hour or so meeting people and discussing their work. I felt a strong sense of ownership and pride because I had the powerful sensation that it was the aura and the thought form I had inadvertently imbued the building with that had attracted the artists and led to this inspired takeover and appropriation. When I woke up, I lay still in order to aid recall. Then I wrote my report. The 20th of February 2010, Creativity Unhoof. This was an interesting excursion. I was meditating and it was very early in the morning. I was unable to maintain my awareness and simply nodded off to sleep. I then realized that I was dreaming. I instantly focused my attention again until I had full waking awareness. Unfortunately, I was not in the most exciting or elevating place. There were a few houses, which looked rather derelict, partly overgrown. The atmosphere was rather dull and the light was dim, like just before daybreak, but there was no sun promising a bright morning. I decided to make the best of the event and if there wasn't enough light I would make my own. Without closing my eyes, I started to settle down and meditated in the middle of a field, simply by becoming aware of awareness as I did before in my meditation. I simply focused on the present, which of course is with me always. No sooner had I started, when my surroundings lit up. At the same time I lifted up into the air and floated gently and effortlessly above the ground, enjoying the great peace I felt in my heart. I also noticed that I seemed to glow and that I cast a bright light around me, like a lantern, to a radius of about 10 meters or perhaps even further. Wherever I went, my lantern came with me and illuminated my surroundings. Not only that, but the grass on the fields I traveled over rather slowly assumed a rich emerald green, and I gradually became aware of thousands of colorful flowers springing into life and swaying gently as I passed. They could not have been there before, because it was too bleak for this. For a moment I began to consider the creative power to be accessed when our attention is no longer focused on anything external or to do with self-interest. It clearly opens ourselves up as a clean channel for creative energies and creating environments clearly designed by our unique inner configuration and pattern. I don't even have to think about it. My state of being, left the way it is, automatically becomes the creative engine, and the joy of this kind of manifestation is totally mine, a wondrous way of self-expression that requires nothing other than focusing attention on the joys of simply being and the present moment. The moment we allow this to happen, we become instruments of the great power of creation. The beauty of this is that each individual will manifest a completely individual and unique environment. All that was needed to encourage this profusion and creative power was to become aware of the serenity I felt as a result of a meditative state of mind. The experience faded as I was about to rise towards a steep cliff top, with the sea spreading out before me. Behind me I had left fields of blossoming flowers and plants of astonishing variety. At this point, I returned to normal waking consciousness in my body and resumed my meditation, but now fully awake physically. Alien life forms and long-lost worlds. Sometimes I imagine some of my reports, when read by people who have never had an OB themselves, will quickly and simply be dismissed as pure fantasy, grabbed from the imagination to make what already appears like fantasy into pure confabulation. In the spirit of my report gathering, I will need to be consistent, totally authentic, and not allow such considerations to interfere with my reporting. There are many things on this our physical level we still cannot explain. When it comes to states of consciousness, we haven't even begun to scratch the surface of understanding. The following reports meet the same criteria as all the previous ones. They were experienced in full waking awareness with my self-identity intact and the full awareness that my physical body was where it was at the time of the experience. My reporting remains factual, no matter what it covers. The deeper I delve into the unknown and the mysteries of expanded realities experienced in full waking awareness, the more rigorously I will adhere to my reporting guidelines and have to be unconcerned with how they may be perceived or interpreted. I am detached from the experiences and care very little whether they are dismissed as fantasies or taken as factual reporting of pioneering probes into the multi-dimensional layers of our reality. They are what they are. It is up to the reader to decide how to regard them. I feel reporting factually as experienced is better than not reporting at all. Nothing was different in what I encountered in the following, except it was unlike anything I had experienced before. The 19th of April 2009, an advanced alien species, I got up to meditate at about 5:30 a.m. My mind was still, but after about an hour, the thought of my father, who I had lost as a 9-year-old boy, popped into my head. As I felt quite sleepy, I decided to leave my meditation and go back to bed. I succumbed to sleep almost instantly, but equally quickly became fully lucid again when I found myself walking along a road. I stopped for a moment, considering the possibility of being there physically. The only way to be sure was to perform the hovering test, which I did. As I hovered, I had full waking awareness. Again the thought of my father popped into my head. I called his name and was instantly overwhelmed by intense sadness. Images of the day he died flooded into my head. I was no longer standing in the road, but transported back into my past, into a darkened room, where I witnessed my father dying when I was a 9-year-old boy. The sunlight of the beautiful May Day was blocked out by heavy, drawn curtains. I was all present, exactly as it happened so many decades ago, though this time I had no age, I was just myself, an awareness in the room. I saw my father's gaunt, jaundiced face, which was little more than a skull covered with skin and yellow eyes in their sockets. I cried. I did not cry when I was the 9-year-old boy. I just handed him the bag with the shells I had collected on the beach at the children's summer camp I had been sent to. Then I had been in a state of shock and he couldn't see the shells I handed to him. So I just put the bag on his pillow next to his head and left the room, in shock and without thoughts. But now I cried, because I had touched on an intense pain. My past had become my present and this present was hard reality. Everything was as I experienced it as a child. I was overcome with the intense pain of knowing that I was about to lose somebody, but the 9-year-old boy could not grasp the right feeling for it, what it was like to lose somebody in front of your eyes, who he had loved so dearly, who had never shown him any anger, only love. Papa, my awareness in the darkened room called, I called, silently, then crying. The pain was unbearable. Just then the ceiling above me opened and, through a hatch, a bright light shone down on me and tried to pull me up, but the sadness had glued me to the floor and would not let me rise. At this point, I struggled to keep waking awareness and tried to rationalize that my father had died more than 50 years ago, but it was futile. My suffering was as intense and it was present and real, not a memory. Then my awareness was challenged by a hive of activity around me that threatened to blur out my waking awareness and draw me into dream narrative, because it became all too much. Against all odds, I succeeded in maintaining lucidity. I could not let this go. I noticed that I was surrounded by a group of people who showed great concern for the emotional state I was in. They asked me who I was and what I was doing here. They were all strangers to me. I also noticed that I was no longer in the darkened room where my father had died, but in a place I could not recognize. My attention was attracted by the sound of paper rustling. I woke up in my bed. Next to me was Julia reading the Sunday paper. She had been waiting for me to get up so we could have breakfast together. I apologized and told her that I had to go back in order to find my father. She smiled and nodded. In order not to be disturbed, I decided to go back to my meditation room, hoping to find my way back into the same lucid state of my out-of-body experience. Settling into my meditation chair, I closed my eyes, knowing that by holding on to the last sequence I might just find my way back into lucidity again. It wasn't instant but, instead of meditating, I allowed myself to drop off into sleep again to find a more natural way back with the intent of gaining lucidity. I then totally surrendered to the forces that might be and dropped off almost instantly and was back in the room again with the same people and instantly back in full waking awareness. This time they seemed to have lost interest in me and there was no longer any sign of sadness either. Instead I started following their discussion telepathically. One of the topics was the art of flying. My intent of meeting my dad had gone by the wayside as I again struggled to maintain lucidity and gradually felt myself being pulled into some nonsensical dream narrative. Then, without warning, I was again fully awake as if something or someone had made a deliberate attempt to wake me up, but I was not in my meditation chair. I was in the room again with the group of strangers as before. But my waking consciousness now was astounding and made me feel that my normal life had been little more than a fantasy or a film script. It was not only that. I felt as if I had been injected with an extra level of clarity and intelligence. My state of super presence seemed to be linked to the presence of the central character of the group, who stood out and commanded all my attention. He was a very tall man, dressed in a long, incredibly attractive gown, which seemed to change pattern and color every time he moved. My first impression was that the fabric was thought sensitive in some mysterious way, and changed as it picked up feelings around it. But, above all, the most noticeable feature was the color of the man's skin, which was a whitish translucent blue, very soft, diffusing the light as velvet does. His strange, almost non-human look made him strikingly attractive. The feeling this evoked in me was the same I sometimes find in beautiful animals, which are not aware at all of their attractiveness. This man too carried a sublime and modest innocence, while at the same time bearing himself with confidence and a natural nobility. As I observed him addressing his group, not paying any attention to their mental discussion, the thought occurred to me that I could be watching a specimen of our human species at a future stage of our evolution, maybe a million years from now. I knew I was wrong when he suddenly looked at me and I realized instantly that I was looking into the eyes of an alien species. The resemblance to humans was only very superficial. Realizing this, I noticed his appearance shifting slightly and that his mutating gown was just part of what he was. His gaze captured my attention with such intensity that my awareness acquired yet a new aspect of superlucidity and a clarity of mind I didn't know existed. While holding my gaze firmly, he sent me a batch of information telepathically. It was packaged in such kindness that I instantly felt a great wave of warmth and affection rolling towards him. There was no smile in response, just a quiet acceptance that let me know that love was the accepted norm of communication among his species. He sent me images of his home planet. Before I had even formed a question to ask, he had already answered everything I was barely aware of. So intense and packed with information was the level of communication that it dissolved any boundaries between our species that might have been there. I had never experienced such total and boundless communication in all my life and, with it, I felt a benevolent invitation to accompany him to his home planet. It was only now that I started looking around to find out where I was, but there were no features, other than a space of light that dissolved into mistiness all around us. Half expecting to be led to an alien spaceship, I was surprised when he told us to be seated on a fairly simple gossamer mat which, as if by magic, materialized underneath us. It was mostly white, and 2 to 3 feet thick, with ample space for all of us to claim a comfortable area. There were no controls. As soon as we were seated, our transport began to move rather fast without as much as lifting up into the air and into black space, which I had anticipated. Instead of the black void of space, we soared into a blue sky with streaks of light shooting past us, the only indication that we were moving. I asked where we were going and was told that we would be traveling the equivalent of 10 million light years towards another galaxy unrelated to our own. The blue space did not change at all. It was a constantly pleasurable journey. I could not tell whether the sounds accompanying us were the results of our heightened emotions or whether my sublime feelings were fanned by the sounds and the shoots of light or the speed, which was exhilarating. I asked why the space was not black and was given to understand that space was not black at all and that we were not traveling through physical space in any case, but a superior dimension of the physical. In response to my question why we had to travel at all through space in this dimension and were not instantly projected, which I always assumed was the possibility of higher dimensional travel, I was given to understand that, although we were traveling unimaginably fast, space was still a reality. He drew my attention to a concept that our current space journey still adhered to the reality of this higher dimension, which was much vaster than the lower physical worlds. I was then provided with instant access to a higher dimensional physics and natural laws that somehow made sense, which I failed to comprehend fully and could not retain. In a nutshell, I had insight that, on higher dimensional levels, laws of nature still applied and that not everything was a matter of thinking and materializing. We were still subjected to it and could not simply override it by a mere focus of intent or wish. By this time I was more taken by the extreme pleasure of traveling. Space had changed somewhat and was now extremely beautiful. Luminous clouds drifted past us, nebula, lights and gigantic stars, and more radiant and magnificent lights. I became absorbed by the splendor of subtle ecstasy rising within me. We finally landed without my even noticing exactly how and where. All I noticed around me was what looked like an oversized control room, the size of a modern football stadium. The only thing I could identify with a semblance of certainty were drifting lights. Even now I was painfully aware how I would struggle to describe all this when returning to my physical reality and how I would record the experience. I was concerned how unbelievable my attempts would sound and how limited my language was and my possible metaphors. Aware of this, I clutched at certain features that would give a semblance to any cultural equivalents, but it was not possible. Nothing from my old culture, even with its most modern science fiction film set designs, would be able to do it justice. I was simply stranded in an environment that was ungraspable, evading any frame of reference. Whatever words I would use in the end, the one fact which left me without any doubt whatsoever, was that I was not dreaming, not even lucidly dreaming. This was hard and tangible reality in a waking awareness mind, a reality unvisited by man. I was in the presence of an alien species in an alien world with no words to describe what I saw. Realizing this, I found the greatest magic was not in what I saw, but in the fact that I was so wide awake, in possession and in control of all my waking awareness faculties. This I found was a miracle beyond comprehension. Meanwhile, I noticed other people milling around my host, treating him with great homage and respect. I was hardly paid any attention to and was taken away by the powerful charisma and aura of this being. Never in my life had I encountered an entity of such strength and inner power. My breath was taken by his appearance and the fluidity of his gestures and movements. I could have sworn his shape was changing as he dynamically expressed himself to his audience, flowing from subtle shape to shape alteration, which was harmonious and powerful without ever losing for a moment his underlying persona and charisma. What a way of self-expression, I thought. What kind of species have I visited? What is its evolutionary history? Why have they brought me here and, above all, why me? Although my host was the main focus of everyone's attention, most of all mine, I watched the others now with more interest and discovered each individual carried an unmistakable yet humble nobility, behaving with sublime poise as if every movement counted. No gesture was in vain, all fluidly harmonized from person to person, like a swarm of fish perhaps, in total synchronicity, harmony brought to its ultimate perfection. How primitive and crude I felt as a representative of my own species, how unpolished, base and primeval. Among this noble race, I felt painfully ashamed and humbled, aware of my almost blind animal origin. As if noticing my discomfort, this noble warrior and host of mine addressed me with great poise, compassion and kindness. I felt a powerful stream of love radiating from him towards me. It was only now that I noticed all this fuss and milling around of his entourage had been to prepare him for a grand ceremony. I became fully aware of this as he addressed me. It was the purpose of my visit, my invitation to learn and to note that mankind is not the only intelligent species and that we are not even intelligent compared to his. You may wonder what this is all about, was his thought sent towards me with a gentle nod and a smile. I would like you to witness the mating ritual of our kind, to put it in its most simple terms. He told me that he was going to merge, meld or unite in some kind of courtship and union with a female aspect of his species. A concept like mother was lit in my consciousness. The female aspect of his species would not be what I might be expecting at all. He told me that his species on this dimensional level needed to procreate, just as we did on Earth, as a necessity to safeguard a future generation. It became clear to me that each being was subject to a life cycle just as we are and that they would progress to a higher plane when their experience here was completed. He also told me that I was the first human being to witness this. I was stunned, without fully absorbing the significance and the enormous privilege of this event. I asked him where the mother was. I was told that she was actually in the very heart center of their galaxy and that we would have to travel there as we did before we arrived. With that we boarded our Gossamer craft. My host now looked even more majestic, dressed in a multi-layered shimmering gown. His entourage too was appropriately attired for this incredible occasion. Everyone radiated nobility and uncompromising attractiveness and beauty. After a short trip we arrived at an ocean of light, which I immediately considered to be the center my host had referred to. Sitting in the midst of swirling light, I beheld a gigantic object of gyrating pattern and colors radiating a beauty which took my breath away. Without being told, I knew that what I saw was the mother. What was mind-shattering was the enormous discrepancy between male and female, as there was literally no resemblance at all between the genders. Not only was the female aspect at least 10 to 20 times bigger than its male counterpart, but the difference was as if between two worlds. I was strangely reminded of some of Earth's natural world, where a diminutive male courts an overwhelming female, and yet the female before me was anything but an animal or a creature. It was a powerhouse radiating love and uplifting blessings to anything that approached its gigantic aura. The mother had no recognizable human features or appearance whatsoever, but what I was most acutely aware of was an overwhelming aspect of femininity that radiated an irresistible attraction. I can only attempt to describe her by suggesting that you consider the most beautiful flower imaginable, opening its petals and breathing out the most enchanting perfume, while continuously performing a dance with its multitudes of leaves, exuberances, changing patterns and radiations of cascades of lights and sounds so sweet that those alone could take you off into a completely different world. What was before me was the super aspect of femininity, the core essence of it, the absolute perfection of life-giving source. I then observed my host opening his arms and drifting towards her as if being invisibly carried. As he drew closer, his aura lit up and he was received by the mother into her inner sanctuary, where he disappeared. What followed from there was a spectacular uniting ritual, which was a song, a dance and a radiation of joy and ecstasy for all the surrounding witnesses to benefit from. Gently turning, the two were united as one. I felt powerfully what was taking place. I felt a burst of bliss and great clarity was radiating from the center, and we all bowed down and sank to our knees. I followed suit instinctively without any thought and in reverence for what was taking place. The benediction that radiated out seemed to spread throughout the galaxy. It was so powerful. I was overawed by the privilege of having witnessed this event, plucked from a distant primitive planet, a society so unevolved and primitive that it made me feel like a mere insect by comparison. I had been ushered into the most intimate sanctuary of a completely alien species to give testimony that there are advanced alien life forms beyond our primitive Earth, and there is a life more unimaginable than any naturalist would able to fathom and yet, in its essence, so very human too. I knew I was here to witness and to record one of the greatest magical wonders of our universe, the generation of new life, the wonder of pre-creation and creation, the essence of what all life is at its core. The forecourts of heaven somewhere, something incredible is waiting to be known. Carl Sagan. In my previous book, I submitted several detailed reports concerning the highest levels of the astral or higher dimensional regions, which, by most people who find themselves here for the first time, is seen as heaven itself. There are crucial characteristics missing though, which distinguishes it from the much higher levels of consciousness that can only be reached after the identification with our ego has been surrendered and all attachments that bind us to any remaining desires have been severed. These are regarded as the true vistas of heaven, as we shall see later. Nevertheless, these realms are extraordinarily sublime, symmetrical and beautiful, characterized by interplaying harmonies that are not quite as apparent on the less energized levels, which still can be extremely beautiful though. Over the years I have taken notes and created many images inspired by this region. Short of repeating one or two reports from my previous book, None of my notes I have taken since then will make a consistent narrative to provide a comprehensive image via one report alone of what these higher realms have to offer. Often I have simply locked these impressions in my soul and later reproduced them as digital paintings, though on their way down into that format they rarely look like their original, but I feel I have still managed to put across the key impressions.